Hello, Bruce. This is David Kukla here. Good to have you back on the line, back on the program here on the Traditional Healers Forum. We've been going at it for about a year now, and we've been blessed to have you here giving us the opening prayers. And as we start this new year, 2012, I thought maybe what we could do here, Bruce, is you could explain to people a little bit about what's the meaning, or why is it that we start these programs with a healing prayer, or why do we start our circles and our ceremonies with that prayer? And some people have been asking me if we could maybe give them a little explanation of your feelings about that. And once we go through that, then we can go into that opening prayer.
The reason why we always do the prayers before any meeting. We call it before anything else. And what that means is that before anything else is that we have to give an acknowledgement for everything that is here that the Creator has put on earth for us, to remind us of that, the seven grandfather teachings of humility and bravery and the wisdom, knowledge. And it's kind of looking into reminding us that there's a greater power of everything that is there, and then for us to kind of bring it back down to, I guess, down to earth, if you may, and to remind us that we need to give a lot of acknowledgement for the things that we have, not so much of what we don't have, but more of what we do have, and that's life. And so when we can think in that way, it gets a little easier for us. And whatever we're going through in life, it brings us back down to earth, I guess, is to say that.
Sort of sounds as if you're saying that it's a way of putting all of our minds into that same place, into that place of gratitude, into that place of acknowledgement. So it's sort of aligning all of us in that bigger circle, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that gratitude that addressing to of what we have in life. And we should take a look at that more often, because if we do, then it isn't so hard. It's not so hard. It isn't like the end of, because really it's the beginning. Because we have to feel that.
Right.
Yeah, we have to feel both. You know,
yeah.
And for us, as First Nation peoples or Indian people, is that that's what we have to do. Because our people have gone through so much in the last few hundred years. You know, we've lost so many people, more than all the world wars put together. And not only losing people, but we're, you know, losing our land. And being taken away from us. And we have to fight for that, because there isn't anybody stepping forward and say, sorry, you know. And how can we help? No one's stepping forward to do that.
In that great loss, no matter if it's someone in your family, maybe as you get bigger into your community, or as you're saying, your nations of peoples, and that great loss, that when you start that opening prayer and that reminding people of the gratitude of what we do have, maybe we don't get lost just in that place of suffering, in that place of giving up, in that place of hopelessness.
And so, you know, we're surviving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have survived the Great Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to see to it that with the help of the Creator and our reminding ourselves every day that we can make some changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it isn't with war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Which every living being is looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And so we still have that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess it's forgiveness in a sense that we trust it too much.
Mm.
And so what we have to remind ourselves is that, you know, that belongs to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we are the ones that are going to show the world that love and kindness is what's going to win out on everything.
Mm. So then that opening prayer is that reminder of also how we're to be in that good way, in that place of not only standing in our truth, but how we stand in our truth.
Really?
Huh? Standing it in.
Mm-hmm. It's more of, I guess, walking the talk instead of just talking.
Yeah, I got some work to do there. And then also what I'm hearing you say, Bruce, is that in that opening prayer, the reason that you do that is that it's the acknowledgement of that greater power. You use the word creator. Other cultures, other indigenous peoples have a different name for that greater power, but it's to somehow put ourselves in perspective, maybe a little bit humility, a little bit of a teaching in humility there.
You know, what's been said before about us is that, you know, the Creator and God are the same.
Mm-hmm.
And to us, it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because God is male, dominant, and the Creator for us is female.
Uh-huh. Matriarchal.
Matriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only one that can bring life into this world.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only one that can give life. So there is a difference. That makes me feel good. Our job is to protect the women and children.
Mm-hmm.
As much as, and that's my job.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I feel good with that, you know, to see to it that there's no more residential schools and there's no one to take our children away from us anymore.
Yeah.
So that we've come a long ways with that.
You know how people get hung up on words, you know, and
some
people hear the word prayer and they go, they get squeamish, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe we could use the word acknowledgement.
Sure.
Uh-huh. There's a lot of power in that word of acknowledgement, not only for ourselves, but for the world around us, eh?
Oh, yeah. Because at this point in time, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of traumas going all throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then seems like the you know, the powers of this world isn't able to fix anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They're supposed to be able to.
Well, I think that gives people a basic understanding anyway, Bruce, of the give it a little depth to the meaning of your opening prayers that you've been blessing us with over this past year. And so maybe with that, why don't we move into the opening prayer here, and yeah, then we can move on into the program.
Okay.
So if you want to give that opening prayer and then maybe explain a little bit of what you're saying, and then we can have a little dialogue on what we're going to be discussing tonight.
All right. Dane tano nani wa dani sli ne. Ne gali magilo, ne wa gets, ne wa ganya daga. Ne daga dene hela dunyo. Ne yadwani zadeni, yadwa sundadeni. Ne jina teso, ne sungwali wagiloni, ne sungwa diso. Negadi ne sogayo gwenyo hadi go ne tunya chiru gadi watanjedo dane nya tagane nugwani go. So what that means is that I introduce myself, humbly introduce myself, that I've decided with the help of my people in growing up that that our ways and our teachings is what's going to save us in the end, with all the things that we have gone through and all the things that we're surviving through, is the willingness to be able to accept the greater power, the higher power. When I say it in a prayer, I say, you know, I humbly, as much as what I can to, not as a task, but to encompass the whole spirit of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mind, the spirit, and everything of the physical part and the emotional part of understanding, you know, of that teaching. And so, and that's every day and every night. And that's something that I have observed with my brother when we were younger, and we watched our grandfather, and said, how many times does he pray in a day? So we said, well, we're going to get up early in the morning, and we're going to, because he was a riser, early riser. And so we got up early in the morning, and we watched every step and every move he made through the whole day. And at the end of the day, I asked him, I says, how many times did he put tobacco down to give acknowledgement? And he said, 28. My brother asked, he says, what did you get then? I says, 27. So I was short one, but that just goes to show you, you know, the sacredness and the holiness of him, you know. And I'm still working on it, and I'm up to 5 so far.
Yeah, it's almost as if life is a living prayer.
Yeah.
And your grandfather, he was a wonderful example of that for your family and for his community. This is, again, David Kukla on La Onda Bajita, the Traditional Healers Forum from the Four Corners of the World. And we're with Bruce Elijah, Oneida Clan of the Iroquois Confederation, healer and activist, community builder. He's given his life to making this a better world, not only for ourselves, but also for our children. They talk about the 7 generations behind us and the 7 generations ahead of us. And with that, we're going to move a little forward in tonight's programs on burnout, the body, mind, heart, spirit connection with that issue. What does burnout mean? Why does it seem to be such an epidemic in our modern culture? I know in the 35 years I've been doing the healing work, the many, many of my clients come to see me just burned out, as if there's nothing left in them. And so I wanted to turn this over to Bruce for a little bit and ask him maybe, or ask you a couple things, Bruce. And one, why do you think that this concept, this imbalance called burnout is so prevalent in our modern culture? And how do you and your communities, how do you address that issue?
Well, for us, it's a song. And the song tells us where we come from, who we are, and we go back to the beginning of time. And it brings us to the present, and it gives us a really good picture of what's ahead of us, the future. And the future in our prophecy gives us a really good insight of what that future is going to look like. That makes me wish that I could live forever, because there's so many good things yet to happen. And I want to see that as much as what I can with the time that I have left on this earth. And I know now that whatever I can't, my children and my grandchildren and so on, they're the ones that are going to see that. And I've paved the way for that to happen. And, you know, it's encouragement, and it's the love of life, and it's understanding that we can accept that, and I can accept that, that power of peace, that power of what love can do, and understanding your place in the world. And that's where I'm coming from. And so we have very little, if any, burnouts, because we have so much, and then the energy comes back to us when we work in that in that realm. Mm-hmm. It's a big circle.
Mm-hmm.
And each time that happens, and then we get tired once in a while. And
sure.
So we, you know.
Tired is different than burnout, right?
Yeah. And so we go back into the sweat lodge.
Mm.
And that in itself right there is what rejuvenates us.
Uh-huh.
What an amazing thing, because we can go back. The sweat lodge symbolizes the womb,
mm-hmm.
of the mother, and where everything is taken care of. And so we can go back inside and rejuvenate, and might as well say reborn again.
And so what I'm hearing you say is that it's an inner perspective of how you look at life.
Yeah.
And when you hold that perspective of not only of where did I come from, who I am, bringing me present into the future, that in itself holds you in a certain energy field, for lack of better words.
Yep.
And so it gives a, there's a, almost plugs you into maybe what you called that higher power, plugs you into that universal life force, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. And then the sweat lodge, way of maybe purifying, maybe letting go of those things, you know, that backpack that you always talk about, maybe a way of getting rid of some of that in the backpack so that you can recharge, regenerate.
That's right.
Mm.
And you can renew that every day if you want to.
Uh-huh. So
yeah.
Probably maybe like your grandfather did, at least 28 times a day.
Working on that one yet.
Yeah, all of us. In regards to other people, the different healers and your community workers, how do you address that issue and encouraging them to, again, that rejuvenation, keeping them from getting burned out, or so that they, you know, feel like they're just spaghetti noodle?
Well, every Monday night evening for about 3 hours, we get together.
Mm.
We get together and just kind of do a lot of sharing. Because, again, in a culture, it's family.
Mm-hmm.
It's having people around you.
Mm.
And so, you know, whether I like it or not, you know, if I don't go to them, they'll come to me.
Uh-huh.
They won't leave you alone.
Uh-huh.
They want to see you being part of the process.
Uh-huh.
You know, so you don't forget, you don't get a chance to feel sorry for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, what I'm hearing you say is that when you say family, that maybe burnout is connected to the isolation that we've created in our modern culture.
Oh, yes.
And that with the presence of family, that's almost a protection, almost a protective veil, if you will.
Yep.
It keeps you on the good path. So glad to have you on the program again, Bruce, and dying to see you up there in Oneida, and maybe we can go pick some strawberries this year.
Oh, that'd be nice.
That'd be great. And so
yeah.
Give my love to the family and to your community, and we'll be talking to you soon. Thank you so much for being on the program. This was David Kukla on La Onda Bajita Traditional Healers Forum with Bruce Elijah, a healer medicine man from the Oneida clan of the Iroquois Confederation. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is David Kukla on the Traditional Healers Forum from the Four Corners of the World on La Onda Bajita. And this is our quarterly show to our program. We have tonight as our guest Bruce Elijah, Francis Weller, Taya Valentina, and Rob Albee. And what we're going to do now on this segment of the program, we're going to be talking with Francis Weller, a psychotherapist, author, poet, and a healer. You just finished a book of yours, Francis, and do you want to just share us a little bit about that book, and then we'll go into some of the work that you do?
Well, thank you for inviting me back, David, and it's good to be back with all of these fine people. The book was called Entering the Healing Ground, Grief, Ritual, and the Soul of the World. And it came out of many, many years of working with people in my practice and in group settings where what became most tangible and most evident was just the amount of undigested sorrow that we carry in our bodies and in our souls. And how do we touch that? And really discovering the requirements that we need in order to truly set that grief down and be open to the experience of joy, but also being open to the greater sorrows of the world, which we need men and women who are willing to digest, you know, to take on that as well. So,
yeah, I just finished reading it, Francis, and wonderful book.
Thank you.
Well written and touched my soul. How can people, if they want it, where could they find it?
They can get it off my website at wisdombridge.net, and there's a place on the website there that they can order it directly through PayPal. So.
Oh, great.
It's available.
Oh, good. I'm sure you're working on your next one, huh?
I am.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
Feeding your soul, huh?
Feeding the soul, absolutely.
Yeah. And so let's move into burnout, Francis. And I call it a modern disease. I think it's something that's been created here maybe over the last, I'm not sure when, but it's definitely prevalent in our society today. I know in the people that I work with, I see that a lot. And I'd sort of like, just from your perspective, how we listened to Bruce earlier, you know, and he was sharing from the Oneida Clan of the Iroquois Confederation, their concept of it and how they deal with it. And how about you, Francis? Where do you think this burnout originates, if it does have a originating place? How can we deal with this in a good way, in a healing way?
It's a really important question and a really important issue. I see a lot of it in my practice.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of contributing factors, I think. One of them is that we have become so compulsively driven to produce. And this idea of productivity is based on a premise that unless I am showing my, or earning my keep, or proving my worth, somehow I doubt I'm going to be welcomed.
Mm.
I mean, I like what Bruce said, that this is based on family and community. Mm-hmm. And those things are so fractured in our culture that we have substituted this image of really trying to prove my worth through constant productivity, constant activity. I was working with someone the other day who I used the phrase, well, it sounds like you have to earn your keep. And there was this stunned silence in the room because she felt that that's exactly what she has to do every day and how exhausted she was by this constant movement towards having to earn her keep and prove her worth. The other piece I think that's in there is this extraordinary complexity that is facing us right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not how the body and the soul and the psyche were designed. We were designed to deal with things pretty much one at a time. Mm-hmm. We would all, and also to do it communally. We would all go out and gather food. We would all go out and bring back water or firewood. Now the complexity of what we're being asked to process is really overwhelming to the mind and to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a huge factor in our burnout. People come into my office saying, I can't remember anything. Mm-hmm. I can't focus on anything.
Mm-hmm.
I feel numb. Mm-hmm. I'm depleted and exhausted. I mean, they're all the classical symptoms of burnout.
Mm-hmm.
And when they stop doing what they're doing, even for a little bit of time, the symptoms abate.
Mm-hmm.
But we are, again, just thrown into this whirlwind of activity, and we can't even find a breath.
Yeah, what I heard you say was this compulsiveness to produce.
Yes.
Earning my keep.
Yes.
And to me, that's a modern concept versus the indigenous concept, the tribal concept of recognizing someone's gift, someone's what I call medicine.
Right.
And welcoming that into the village as a place where they belong, which is totally in the opposite direction of production.
Well, in the indigenous culture, belonging was a felt experience that was placed into the body by the community.
Mm-hmm.
We've turned that around, where now it's up to me to try to prove to the community that I'm worthy of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
and that's a dollar sign, right?
That's the dollar sign.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, even in our language, we talk about what's your net worth.
Uh-huh.
You know, the language itself reveals some of the underlying beliefs and premises.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to just point out around the indigenous cultural ideas is that identity was inseparable from community,
mm-hmm.
and inseparable from place, mm-hmm. and inseparable from the clan, and inseparable from cosmos. We have lost most of that. Now it's just me. Identity is now kind of a isolated, fragmented thing, and we end up bouncing off of each other, but not feeling some type of interpenetration or commonality.
Mm-hmm.
And that isolation also makes us very insecure.
And so that separation from cosmos and these other elements, family and community, this isolation, it is a way in which then there's no feeding of, but nothing but a drain.
Right, 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 exactly.
And in that draining, let's take that a little bit further then. So where do we begin? Where do we begin that healing process, Francis?
I think one of the important things is for us to question even the basic structure of how we imagine who we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I begin to feel myself into an intricate and intimate layering of participation in the cosmos, in the community, in my family, in my body,
mm-hmm.
I begin to move out of isolation. Now, in that sense, out of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. so I move back into a feeling of communion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I can begin to relax and breathe differently.
So what I'm hearing you say is that a part of this burnout, that word, this new phrase, it has some connection to the loss of identity with who I am.
Yes, I absolutely believe that.
Uh-huh.
We become mechanisms in the machinery.
Uh-huh.
So and rather than mm-hmm. participants in the cosmos.
Uh-huh.
It's an incredibly different imagination
mm-hmm.
and perception. And once you become a cog, or once you become a mechanism in the machinery, machines don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
There is no silence. There's no rest. There's mm-hmm. no renewal. There's no play.
Mm-hmm.
There's no laughter. There's no sensuality. There's no eroticism.
Mm.
Machinery just keeps going.
Mm.
And even in our medical models, it's piecemeal.
Mm-hmm.
It is treated as if it is machinery needing to be modified or adjusted.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole idea of how do we really feel into our experience is mm-hmm. is practically non-existent.
Uh-huh. And so then if someone then comes up and says, well, geez, David, I listened to your program, but I don't know who I am.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what would be a beginning place for them? Something that's doable, something that's, you know, grounded. Where do people start?
Mm-hmm. Well, with friendships.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Remember how when you and Rob and I used to meet all the time? And,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, the stories we lived with were so minimal
mm-hmm.
and so tragic
mm-hmm.
until we began to give each other sufficient reflection as to who we actually were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, identity is not shaped in isolation,
mm-hmm.
much mm-hmm. different than the psychological mindset of it's all interior.
Mm-hmm.
Identity is formed, it's more of an alchemy, it's a matrix of intimacies.
Uh-huh.
And I need multiple reflections from people
uh-huh.
to begin to reflect that. What do you see?
Uh-huh.
You know, how am I mm-hmm. moving in the world? What mm-hmm. gifts do I bring to the community? When you and Rob started seeing me as I was rather than mm-hmm. the story I was living with,
mm-hmm.
that's when I began to become Francis.
Beautiful.
You
yeah.
Know?
Ah.
you know.
Good words, good words, Doc. Yeah. And so what we're sharing with everybody tonight is that a good way to break out of this concept of burnout, this isolation, this mechanism that we maybe feel trapped in and just sucking us dry, start with cultivating some friendships.
Mm-hmm.
Cultivating some friendships where you feel safe, where you can be seen, where you can be heard, and you can be supported in maybe something that is in there somewhere but needs to be coaxed out.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say grief is another part of that.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's
because?
Well, it's one of those things that is anti-machine.
Oh, okay.
It really, I mean, there's nothing fabricated or nothing coerced when grief is present.
Uh-huh.
It is simply the genuine expression of a soul in protest.
Uh-huh.
From conscription into a system that denies our humanity, that demands that we become numb pieces of the machinery. The grief is a beautiful protest against that, you know.
And so could we say that about all emotions and all feelings?
I think we can, yeah.
And so that maybe an aspect of this burnout is a numbing of what we're feeling.
Well, I think it's a single, how would I say it? It's a one-dimensional focus on only one aspect of our being, rather, and then all the other ones kind of go into a sense of neglect or denial.
Okay, and so then let's move a little forward in that what you're talking about, and going into that body, mind, heart, spirit paradigm, if you will, that concept of that circle of how these four different body systems are interrelated and intimately married to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you see that in your work, the body, mind, heart, spirit, and how do you address that with the people that come for healings?
Well, I think I begin with trusting that their psyche knows a lot more about what's moving in them than they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we begin listening to this otherness that's present in the dreams, in their symptoms, that there's wisdom being expressed through their suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than just trying to imagine that there's some one singular system, that they're actually a complexity of imagination and mood and feeling and relationship and intimacy, all of those things are present.
Mm-hmm.
And that begins to free them up from how they're seeing themselves.
I know you, in some of your ceremonies and your healing circles, I know there's music, drumming.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see that playing into this as far as the healing aspect for people who don't understand that?
Well, I'll often tell the people I'm working with that, you know, the therapy in this room will take us only so far.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, the greater redemption, the greater healing will only happen in the context of village.
Mm.
And in the context of village, as the Mayan poet Humberto Acabal said, a silent village is a dead village.
Mm.
So we have to sing together. We have to bring our voices together. We have to dance and move together. Those are all practices that are so ancient.
Mm-hmm.
But why? I mean, they seem to be fundamental to the soul's feeling of being able to move fully into the present moment with other people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then in that village concept that you're talking about, and moving beyond the therapy, what I'm hearing you say is that we need to be witnessed. Is that true?
Fundamentally.
Mm.
I mean, our need for attention is as natural as our need for sunshine.
Mm.
It is so fundamental to the psyche to need attention. And we get embarrassed about that. We feel ashamed about it.
Mm-hmm.
We ridicule people. They don't do that. They only want attention.
Mm.
Well, of course they do.
Don't we all?
Jeez. We need that.
Uh-huh.
And part of the, I think part of the healing of burnout is getting some, that's why I said about friendship before, getting some genuine attention given to you.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me your story.
Yeah.
What's going on for you?
Uh-huh.
What ails you?
Mm.
What troubles are in your heart?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what brings you joy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to have that really honestly paid attention to is so healing and reminds us that we're actually human beings and not a mechanism and not a part of the machinery.
That reminds me a little earlier when we were talking with Bruce, and he was talking about acknowledgement.
Exactly.
And I equate that with attention.
Yes. Yes.
Then the healing of acknowledgement. I remember when my grandson Kaiva, he was about 4 or 5, and I'd take him and Elijah to the playground, you know, on Sundays so they could play on the swings and slides and stuff. And so I had the Sunday paper, and of course I had to read the sports section, you know. And so I'm reading the sports section, and they're playing on the, all the things there. And Kaiva's going to go down the slide for the first time, a big one, right?
Yep.
And he says, "Grandpa, are you watching?"
Yeah.
I say, "Yeah, I'm watching."
Yeah.
And so then he went down, but I was reading the newspaper. I went back to the newspaper, right? And so he hits the ground. He gets up and he says, "Grandpa, you weren't watching me, were you?" And, "Oh, man, you're right. You got me."
That's right.
So I put down that newspaper, and he went up on that slide, climb way up, And then on his way down, the slide actually went in the opposite direction of me.
Uh-huh.
His head was turned 180 degrees, and he wanted to make sure that Grandpa watched him all
That's
the way
right.
down.
That's right.
Needed acknowledgement.
Exactly.
Needed that attention.
Needed that attention.
And the smile on his face.
Yeah, yeah.
Whew.
And when do we think we've stopped needing that?
Yeah, that's good. That's very good.
You know, and in the absence of that genuine attention, we've turned it into a distorted thing called approval.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so much of what that compulsive productivity is about.
Mm-hmm.
I have to somehow prove to you and get that approval from you that I'm okay.
Uh-huh.
So the genuine attention has been substituted with this secondary satisfaction of approval.
Uh-huh. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show again tonight, Francis, and just the insight that you bring is those are such good words for everybody, and I love how you talk about the need to come again together as a family, as a village, as a community, same as what Bruce has been saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of needing to belong.
Absolutely.
And there's healing. The burnout is in maybe possibly one of the reasons is that lack of belonging to something, to someone.
Yes.
Whether it be a relationship, a family, a community, or a nation.
Yeah, it just reminded me of in the Chinese language, they spell the word busy with two ideograms that mean heart killing. So that's part of the burnout. We are too busy and we're killing our hearts, and we need to actually nourish the heart.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And so I want to thank you for being on the
program. My pleasure, David.
This was Francis Weller, healer, psychotherapist, author up in Santa Rosa, founder of the Wisdom Bridge. And been talking to us about burnout and ways that we as a community can start healing that by coming together and establishing some friendships and communion.
That's right.
Have communion. Okay, this is David Kukla on La Onda Bajita, a traditional healers forum. And we're going to take a little break here. Stay tuned. We'll be coming back with Rob Elby. And with Taya Valentina, and we're going to talk about different aspects of burnout and from their experiences with it. So thank you for tuning in.
Welcome. This is La Brava. We are presenting a traditional healers forum from the four corners of the world. I'm here with my co-host, David Kukula. And tell us about the interviews we just listened to.
Tonight's program has been on burnout, what we call a modern disease. And Bruce Elijah Oneida Clan of the Iroquois Confederation was talking about how in their village, how they addressed that. And I think one of his main points was family, and that isolation is a big cause, and that one of the ways that they heal that, or I don't even know if how do you heal something they don't have, but the way that they stay strong is they know where they came from, they know who they are, and they know where they are going. And so knowing who I am gives an inner perspective that seems to feed you or feed a certain energy that carries you. It's almost as if you know your life purpose. And then Francis Weller, he was talking about the isolation also. And then that we have a compulsivity to produce, earning my keep were Francis's words, and which created a huge separation from the cosmos, if you will. In other words, who we are is a net worth. It's a financial number versus who. So who I am becomes almost a material thing versus a soulful thing. And so he was talking about the need to have a friend, have friends, have someone you can lean on.
It seems a little bit simple, but at the same time, I think especially now with all the social network sites, people mm-hmm. are having a really hard time connecting on a true level with people.
Mm-hmm. Face to face.
Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that it's very hard to communicate nowadays. People don't seem to get the nuances of feeling and emotion mm-hmm. like they used to. Mm-hmm. So right now we have Rob Albee. Mm-hmm. So for our listeners, he's the founder of Inside Circle Foundation and helping maximum security convicts actually take responsibility for their lives. And so you two are going to have a little discussion about our continuing topic of burnout.
Yeah, first I want to thank you, Rob, for being here again with us.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
And taking time out from, I know, your busy schedule and all the work that you're doing there at Folsom Prison. Why don't we go in the direction of the community that you work with? Bruce talked about his, Francis, you know, was talking about his community, and you work with men who are incarcerated.
I do.
And maybe life sentences.
Yep.
And so from this place of burnout, how do you men deal with that? What are the conversations like? How do you heal that in such a concrete environment?
Yeah. I was really struck by what both Bruce and Francis talked about earlier about the sense of community. And having been an ex-convict myself, I remember and recognizing the men that I work with what it feels like to really be isolated. Not just in prison, but before I got to prison, I felt really isolated. And I think that need to be recognized for my own intrinsic value. Mm-hmm. I couldn't put it into words then, and a lot of guys that I work with couldn't put it into words when they first started this idea. But I think mm-hmm. it's the same kind of essential or essence kind of urge mm-hmm. that they feel lack of somewhere and can't articulate. Mm-hmm. And so when I heard them talk about, and it's true with the different indigenous cultures that I spent time with, is that those people in those cultures have a whole community that recognizes their own, I guess the easiest way is that each person in the community is seen with some unique connection to the sacred that they're mm-hmm. embodying. Mm-hmm. And so when they bring that, they're recognized and seen. Mm-hmm. And it's cultivated in those people from the time they're born. They see that they carry a certain unique, we've used the word medicine, which is the same word as, you know, a gift. Some person has, each one of us has a gift that they're able to bring. And so these men in prison, a lot of them were never recognized in that way, seen as though they have some value somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so part of the work, a lot of the work is help them discover what it is that they have medicine for, what their medicine is. And even though I work with a lot of men who are never going to get released again, still as human beings, they want to have some sense of value, some sense of purpose. And so we really work hard at trying to find out what is that. And most often it begins with just letting them kind of talk about what they're feeling, what they're going through. And we have to work through a lot of anger, a lot of issues. But almost always it gets down to being seen. I know it's difficult even as we sit here, we're on the radio, you can't really see us. But communication doesn't, for me, I've kind of tried to help them to see that communication doesn't take place with words. Mm-hmm. It takes place in the eyes and the way we move our bodies, and there's a whole package there. Mm-hmm. And so it helps them to kind of start to begin to see, oh, there's other than just words and just, and I think most often in culture, and Francis alluded to this too, we're taught from a really young age that we have to produce, we have to earn our keep, we have to be that somebody, and it almost always is a dollar sign. And so just trying to help one of the ways that we work with the men inside is just, I ask them to just start writing. That's what saved my life when I was inside, is I just found a paper and a pencil and I just started putting it out there on paper for myself, not for anybody else. And so they began to realize that they do have something else in there besides just being a gangbanger or just somebody who can get over on somebody else, or, there's something. Oftentimes one of the exercises we do is I'll have them look around the circle and say, listen, as you look around these other men in this circle, you can just look at another man and know that thing about him that speaks when he doesn't. There's something about him. He's kind, thoughtful, he's fiery, he's there's something about him. That's the beginning of starting to cultivate medicine. And it's almost always, at least from my experience, we can almost always recognize it in each other, but it's real difficult to see it in ourselves. And so when I'm not paying attention to that in myself, then I feel like I'm setting myself up for that trap of burnout. Burnout, whether it's the job or relationships or my connection to sacred or whatever. If I'm not paying attention to that thing in me that really is who I am, I think I'm setting myself up for that possibility of burnout.
What I heard you say is that, again, that you do this in circle.
Sure.
This isn't one-on-one therapy, but this is men in circle sharing their hearts.
Yeah, I mean, I do some one-on-one, not a lot, but primarily it's that sense of community. We're trying to create a sense where a place where they can belong, where they can see and be seen. You know, not just see others, but be seen too. It's crucially important.
So you feel that this whole sense of belonging, the sense of community, again, is the healing salve, if you will.
Yeah, I just, we're social beings. Some people are able to live isolated and seem to be happy and thrive, but for myself and most of the people I know, we are social creatures, and there is some power in that circle of giving and receiving compassion, being seen and being able to be seen, and that whole circle, the way it goes around.
And so then in that place of burnout, we were talking earlier the other day about it related to a part of us that isn't living our life purpose, and that maybe we are just that mechanism Doc was talking about. Maybe that maybe it ties into there about, in the work we've done together, of living your medicine, living your gift.
Right. Or maybe it's shifted.
Yeah.
Sometimes it shifts. Sometimes we grow out of what we were doing that fed us, and maybe it's time to move on. It's time to go to the next thing, and I stay too long and it becomes burdensome. It becomes hard, and I keep asking myself, why is this, I used to love this, and it may just be, our growing out of whatever we were in, or a way to do it in a new way. I think that's what happens a lot in relationships, is people just, that initial fire, and then they go through a certain, and then they get that, oh, geez, what am I doing? I think it could be either time to just all right, what am I doing? Is it might just be a new phase, a growing piece, or something that most often it feels to me when I've been through that, that either it was time to go for a big change or to shift what I was doing in some way.
Mm-hmm. And then back to the prison work you do. I know you co-founded the Insight Circle Foundation, mm-hmm. and I know that a big driving force of that was, again, you needing to belong.
Sure.
And maybe you could talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. I get seen in a unique way there. Mm-hmm. All the things that I went through as a kid, I went through all the time I spent was in my teens and 20s. And as I moved out of that and changed my life, and, you know, I shot heroin most of my life, and as I slowly broke away from that and found jobs and stable relationships and kind of got my life together, I felt like I'd just thrown all those years in the dump, you know, like I'd just wasted them. And when I started to go back into the prison, it felt like for the first time those years had value somewhere.
Oh.
They don't have a lot of value most often out here. Mm. They don't. Maybe I could have done it in another way, but in there, those years, it was like redeeming. It's like, wow, I really felt like I didn't just waste my time. You know, I didn't just blow it, you know. And I was able to be seen and appreciated and be able to see and appreciate. And I
so,
think that made a big difference.
And so in that place of you finding that place where you can be seen, it gave life purpose, and it took you out of that modern concept called burnout, if you will.
Sure.
And so then, what do we say to our listeners tonight that maybe they're asking that question, and I'm sure you've heard it from many of your people, is what is my life purpose? Mm-hmm. You know, how do I find that? Why, you know, if I was born with it, of which I believe we are, how does someone start venturing in that arena of finding their life purpose so that this modern mechanism called burnout can maybe be put over here somewhere, and they can get then charged, huh?
Sure.
By that life force that wants to just flow through us as we create, because I believe it's a creative energy.
Absolutely. You know, I think the very first step is to learn how to get quiet. You know, I think that most often when I or in the past or somebody else has talked to me about this concept, they try to overstuff with other stuff. You know, they try to overcompensate by, you know, getting the boat or trying a new hobby or what, you know. What's worked for me is to try to just get quiet and listen what really matters, try to really listen to what maybe the universe or spirit or whatever your concept of that is, to start to tap into how do I reconnect with that part of me that we talked about earlier about, and that might be the sacred.
When you say get quiet, why don't you elaborate on that?
I mean, literally get quiet. I mean, turn the TV off, take time for yourself, go for walks, write, listen, you know, not so busy stuff, but maybe just kind of, you know, turn the volume down a little bit and see if you can, you know, start to listen to something other than what's been the noise so far.
And so it's sort of what we've been talking about is moving away from isolation into community, into family. But also there's another element that Rob's bringing up, is that there is also some self-quiet time that's required, and so that we can tap into the village that lives inside of us.
Sure, and I don't know that it's so much of just quiet, like quiet's concept. Mm-hmm. I mean, just to be able to, for me, I have to really start to lower all the noise inside my head in order just to be able to hear you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about being in touch with your family and your village and your friends, for me, I have to kind of get quiet to do that. Mm-hmm. And so part of me is to slow down enough to be able to hear what the, you know, I really believe that the universe or spirit or whatever that concept is speaks through other people to me and through, you know, a lot of different mechanisms. But part of it is, am I capable of hearing what's trying to be presented to me? Am I capable of really going inside and examining what my heart really wants? You know, or am I just with that busy action all the time and the busyness of trying to pay the bills and keep the job going and whatever all that takes and the relationships and the kids and all of it, you know? Mm-hmm. So it feels like at least initially is to begin to try to listen to that deeper voice.
Mm-hmm. And so in the greater context of things, where do you put burnout? How come that word has come into, or that concept's come into our culture today? How was it born? What was it born from or of?
Well, I think culturally, and both Bruce and Francis alluded to this, culturally, we're taught that we just have to be on point all the time and be ahead of the game and earning and keeping our keep. And so constantly that's part of our consciousness is how do I stay up on the game? How do I get in the fast lane? How do I, it's constantly a part of that. And there's, I don't think it's anything but inevitable, but sooner or later, the soul starts to say, wait a minute, there's got to be something other than this. Mm-hmm. There's got to be more to it.
And so maybe you're talking about core values of maybe trying to find what those core values are?
Well, sure. I mean, when you talk about, we've used the word medicine and people's gifts and their connection to the sacred, I think we're all talking about the same thing fundamentally is how do I really begin to be who I really am instead of who I was told I should be?
Ah, there we go.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Who I really am, not who I was told I should be.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us are so preoccupied. I mean, from the first grade on, kindergarten on, we're told what we're not. Mm-hmm. And just packed full of, data. And that whole thing of you got to keep living up, got to keep getting more and more and more, keep becoming more and more. That's a pretty fundamental concept in our culture. And what I've noticed about the indigenous cultures is they don't really come at it from that perspective. Mm-hmm. It's really about, can we nurture in this person who they really are? Mm-hmm. Can we figure out a way to really support them in being that instead of trying to fill them with all the data? Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to fill them with what we think, what do they really need?
Sort of a big sense of lack.
I think all of us grew up with something that sort of...
Not enough.
Man, I just can't quite pull it off. Can't quite do it. Even though I'm putting on a good face, I feel like I'm not quite there.
And I wonder how much of that ties into our prisons overflowing. How much does this concept of burnout tie into incarceration? Is it at these, for example, our young men, is there such a lack, that sense of burnout? There's how do I feel this thing?
Well, I think a couple of different things come into play, especially with young men going to prison. Is one is they a lot of them are so apathetic to begin with that they just don't think they can make it anyway. So they don't care to play by the rules that we normally set up in our lives.
Already, that's what I say, already burned out.
They start out as I'm not going to make it anyway, so let me just join this thing. These people at least appreciate me, and let me just be part of this. It's exciting, and it's fun, and it's, it's enticing at that age.
Yeah.
But the other piece is that we really don't teach our young people how to be who they really are at their core essence, at their real fundamental. We really don't have very many mechanisms in our culture that really, teach them how to cultivate that in themselves.
And so for our young brothers out there, what would you say to them now that they're still, say, free from the justice system? What would you say to our young growing men as they're turning into adults, as we're welcoming them into adulthood? What would be your words to them tonight, Rob?
I've said it many times to a lot of different groups and groups of kids over the years, and I think that they need what I needed at that age. And if they can find this in their life, they need to find it like they need to breathe, and it's to find one person on the planet that really, really cares about them. I don't care if you got to go out and find a stranger. You find somebody who really gives a damn. And if you can find one teacher, just one person who really knows how to cultivate their unique perspective of the sacred, it can make all the difference in the world.
Isn't that interesting, La Brava, how we're coming back into this whole thing of that sense of belonging? We can't do it alone, this sense of isolation, and how it fuels so much of the dysfunction that we're seeing in our society today. And so that I think what we're saying tonight is that we need to come together. We need to come together as adults, and if we are experiencing that burnout, and for those ones coming up behind us, we got to make our door open to them.
Yeah, they really need to hear that they're not crazy. Uh-huh. They really need to hear that they're not unwanted, that they're not just going nuts. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to have people in their corner who really hear their hearts and hear their heart's song. Mm. And know how to help them sing that song.
Wow, that was beautiful. That was beautiful. And so we've been listening to Rob Albee, the founder of Inside Circle Foundation. He does healing circles inside of Folsom Prison. And you can find him on the internet at insidecircle.org. .org.
Yeah.
And I know that they're at a place right now where they are doing some fundraising. Could you tell us a little bit about that, just a minute?
Yeah, periodically throughout the year we do fundraisers in order to keep the work going. We bring men from all over the country, in fact, from all over the world. We do 2 4-day events a year where we bring folks from all over the country and the world. People come from Australia and England, men who have done this work, elders who can show kids how to hear their song and sing their song. And we spend 4 solid days with them twice a year, and it costs a lot of money. So we don't get any state funds. This is all from private donations, and we've done it that way intentionally. So, we need support. We need your help.
Yeah, and you have shown to the prison system that the correctional department that your programs do work.
Yeah, one of the we've got two folks that these 4-day trainings that we do. There's one coming up in June, and there's two men who were part of the program inside years ago who are now off parole, and we're going to try to get them cleared to be the first two to go back inside to help the men that are inside. So. It's been reducing violence. It shows that men who take responsibility for their lives make cleaner, better decisions for everybody. Mm-hmm. The men that we work with are primarily lifers. A lot of people ask us, why do you work with lifers if they're never going to get out? Fundamentally, it's because they're human beings first. Mm. But secondly, it's that they're the ones that control the tenor of the prison for people who are going in and out. Mm-hmm. And have a lot of effect on the men who are coming back to us. Mm-hmm. So to do nothing is a real tragedy. So, we're just trying to make a difference.
Yeah, and that sort of ties into what Bruce was saying earlier, that in their prayers, that what they talk about is love and kindness. And what I'm hearing you say is that in your prison work that you've reduced the violence.
Yeah.
And brought some kindness in those circles.
Yeah, I mean, let me be clear. It's still prison. There's still violence. There's still a lot of violence.
Right.
And we don't reach everybody. But for those men who do want to make that choice, at least it's there.
Okay. You know? Very good. Well, thank you so much, Rob, for giving us your perspective. And I think probably most valuable words that I heard was that for us as men and women, that we need to reach out to our younger ones, those teenagers that we call the problem ones, right? We need to reach out to them and cover their backs. Let them know that, I'm here for you unconditionally.
I think that's very, very much lacking in their lives. Like Rob says, we are trained from kindergarten to see what we're lacking rather than to rejoice in what we do have. So for those of you just tuning in, you're listening to La Onda Bajita Special.
a traditional healers forum from the four corners of the world. My co-host is David Kukula, and we are talking about the subject of burnout. And we also have wonderful guest Thea Valentina here, and she is fantastic. She's a healer, and she works with women and empowers them through dance. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you use to help the people move forward.
Hi, it's nice to be here. Happy spring, everybody. It's
happy spring.
Beautiful. So I love listening to everything that's just been said. And I know what burnout is. I can feel it when it's in my body. And and I think for women, we're somewhat trained to, especially nowadays, to want to hold it all together and make sure we look really good while we're doing it. And so there's stretching going on that I haven't seen before, where it's this sense of, you know, what's the role of woman, and being the provider, being the nurturer, being the wanting to make sure that everything's handled, and part of that is wanting to control everything as well, because there's this sense in our nervous systems that we don't feel safe. And so then why don't we feel safe? How do we get back to feeling safe? And that's connecting to our body. And a lot of times we then want to make sure everything outside of ourselves is in order so that we can feel safe, and we want to control things versus coming back and feeling connected to our own physiology and the rhythms in our bodies, whether we're maiden, you know, a young woman who has not had her menses yet, or her moon, as we call it, or if we are in the mother, whether you have a physical child or not, in the mother years or in the crone years, there's a sense of how to connect to the rhythm of our physiology, which is that we have a womb. And we have this connection to the elements so deeply. We are secular creatures as women. And I know men have that, their own secular nature. And we are very connected, all humans are, to the moon and the water element, and how the moon pulls the ocean tides. And for women to be able to become in touch with the elements in nature wherever you live, whether there's cement under your feet. You know, I've said this in the last programs. I've called out to you women, wherever you're at right now, look out. Where's the moon? Then breathe. Bring the breath into your body. Feel your heart. There's new data now, and thank goodness this science is matching some of the indigenous life ways that we have known, which is our heart is it's this thinking capacity in the heart. There's the electromagnetic field of the heart thinks. There's a thinking element. And we don't think with just the gray and white matter. So if we bring that breath into our heart as women, and then bring it down into the womb, the water heart that I call it. We women have two hearts. We have a water heart in our womb, a feeling heart that's secular, that moves through. And we, when we have our menses and we have our period or our moon, then we have an opportunity to not go loco or loca, to not go into lunacy with it, but to actually ride the wave of deep intuition. And when we are in that cycle, I know we have to work and put the bread on the table. Sometimes I know what that's like. I understand that. And yet how do we do it where maybe we trust something bigger than having to say yes to that next thing? And stretch ourselves to the point of breaking and burnout. And saying, okay, I'm going to pull in a little bit because I know my moon is coming. Or if we're not sure, start writing it down, getting in tune with what our cycles are. So I think, you know, there's a sense of connecting to the elements, connecting to our womb, connecting to the cycles. And that in and of itself, we can take responsibility for our own burnout and not become victims.
So what I'm hearing you say is that for you as women, that a big element of this burnout is a disconnection from the natural element, the grandmother, the moon, and this womb that lives inside of us that sort of feeds these waters that are circulating and doing their little dance. And in that absence of relationship, something goes amiss with you?
Well, there's a sense of, you know, the generation and ahead of me or behind me, I'm going to be 47 in April. And the generation, the women, they worked hard to get certain rights. And in that, my perception, because I have many female clients from this generation, is that they, instead of finding out what is their own masculine energy, every male or female, in my perspective, has a feminine and a masculine, so a night and a day, a yin and a yang. This may sound like new concepts to some people, but there's a sense of, we have a sense of moving forward, and that's the yang, moving forward, okay, listening to your intuition and then acting forward. Well, there was a sense of moving forward by replicating what we saw in men. And our physiology cannot match men. We do not have testosterone running through us like you all do.
Mm-hmm.
So what I have witnessed is the generation before worked really hard to get things handled and done. And now I'm seeing the women in their 30s, even 20s, going back to almost that opposite polarity. And I'm in the middle watching these two generations on either side of me. And the younger women I'm noticing are pulling in a little bit, maybe staying home because they want to, if they can, or making it work, choosing simpler lives. So I'm seeing some of that happen. And then I'm also seeing the powerhouse women, you know, trying to find new ways to find what is their way of having their power and what does that mean to them and why, what's motivating them to have power. And is it to be able to have freedom? You know, because one reason we burn out is we're working extra hard. We still don't get paid as much as men for the work we do. And women are right now more educated than men. So, you know, there's this sense of, if I'm speaking the woman's voice, I tend to usually not go men, women. I have two beautiful sons. I've been married for 20 years. I love the masculine. I'm very comfortable. But most of my clients are women. 98%.
You know, it's, maybe there's a piece in here, and maybe we talk about this a little bit, but earlier in the show, Bruce Elijah, the Oneida Clan of the Iroquois Confederation, he talked about their creator. And they don't call it a god, but a creator, because in their culture, in their village, the creator's feminine, is matriarchal.
That makes sense.
And so that the leaders of the village are the women, is that water that you're talking about. And is it possible that in our modern world, this word burnout is that patriarchal energy, that masculine dominant energy that is burning out?
Well,
so maybe there's another side to this whole word of burnout. You know, maybe we are burning out, and maybe on a certain level, if we understand it from another perspective, it needs to burn out so that feminine energy, that nurturing energy, can come back and bring some balance to a world. I mean, we got global warming. I mean, this place is burning up. It's burning out. And so maybe we're moving into that direction you're talking about, Dea, where
maybe we as men need to, you know, put on the hold them, pull back on the reins here and turn it over.
Well, there's a sense of honoring the masculine, mm-hmm. and each, what does that word even mean? I always love speaking about, well, what is that word, masculine, mm-hmm. feminine? Mm-hmm. I like to think of it as, well, there's the moon. It has a receptive pulling quality. Women's physiology is made that way, so feminine. The sun is more of a masculine.
Fire.
Fire. Mm-hmm. And yet we, within ourselves, I'm very fiery. I find that I have quite a bit of masculine energy, and that's part of my makeup, whether it's through what I felt in my own mother's womb. But I see that, and I have to work with it as a double-edged sword, like when to pull in and how far to move out, you know. And so what I've also witnessed is men wanting to, in Marin County especially, that's, you know, the demographic where I'm in, is I'm seeing men that are reading different books and wanting to become educated. And to own the feminine, they're dismasculating themselves. I don't know how to say it. It's like how to feel, what does that feel like to be in one's body when that testosterone's running through you and you are that male? And not feel ashamed or bad just because of what the outside has shown it's done, misuse of power. Don't throw the power down, but how to use it in the right way. Mm-hmm. So, I, you know, mm-hmm. because there's something about, yeah, stand with that backbone and yet still hold the receptivity. And I, you know, I sit and listen to you all, and I hear it in the tone of your voices. Mm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And one thing else I wanted to discuss was about the teens. Is this a good time to do that?
Yeah, okay. This is, we're talking with Taya Valentina here on the Traditional Healers Forum from the Four Corners of the World on La Onda Bajita tonight. We have also Rob Albee, Francis Weller, and Bruce Elijah with us, being co-hosted here with one of my best friends, Norma LaBrava. She holds us all together. She's the glue. So thank you for being the glue, Norma.
I'm glad to be the glue. I love you guys a lot.
And so we've been sort of going round table here from just some different perspectives of burnout, what it means. And we're talking now with Taya Valentina Curandera. She does her healing work in Marin County. And she has been talking to us about while not only the moon cycle within the woman and that need to, how much control am I using or misusing, and where do I claim that fire, and also how do men claim the good fire inside of them, and so not that we're not talking about spineless men, and so how do these two energies come out, and how does that play into burnout? You know, I mean, how does that play out? Does it play out by a man trying to be too much of, I don't know, carrying too much water? I mean, where does that come in, Taya?
Well, there's a sense of pulling in, if that's the question. What I've witnessed in men is if you pull in, mm-hmm. and don't feel one's fire, well, if you pull in, it's almost like, well, then there's no fire either. Mm-hmm. Burn out, if that's where we're playing with the word. So then it is this sense of not being able to activate in one's life and feel who you really are,
mm-hmm.
and speak. Versus, and so there's a passivity that gets created and then aggressive.
Mm.
So that underpinning, mm-hmm. and that cycle wears on the adrenals, that cycle wears on the organs, these mm-hmm. emotional mental cycles, mm-hmm. wear on your physiology,
mm-hmm.
you know, we think we can, you know, even our thinking cycles,
mm-hmm.
you know,
so we can burn out by not claiming the fire.
Ab- Absolutely, absolutely.
And we can burn out by using too much fire. So again, I think, are you talking balance now?
Yeah, I'm absolutely. That's the dance. And, you know, the first body of work that I ever brought through was called Reclaiming Our Bodies Awake. And it was a program back in the early 90s for women recovering from eating disorders. And it came from my own recovery from really extreme bulimia. And, you know, that's extreme burnout, because you're smiling and acting like it's all okay. And you're out in that world and you just are all together, and yet you're killing yourself. Huh. You know, It's instead of going out and hurting somebody else and being violent outward, it's an implosion versus the explosion. And there's something there with that, with women, is that, you know, it's we burn out by trying to be perfect. We burn out by wanting to have it all together. And that isolation, I had that on my list as well, is that we isolate as women and we need to stop doing that. And I think I'm going to call us out, those that have, I don't, you know, there's certain things where there's a stoic being brought up if you come from immigrant family sometimes, where the rest of the family's in another country, and that was my case, and I witnessed it, where you're just independent and you're needing to hold it together, and you tend to keep your distance sometimes from other women. And women, we need to come together, and that's my practice. This life is coming together with other women. And I'm really comfortable doing it when I'm in charge. How to do it when I'm just with other women and I'm not like control, being the leader? Oof. And then secondly is, you know, the practice that I've had for the past 15, 20 years is soul sanctuary. So it's that place where people's souls are weary. And so just show up, hang out, lie down on the table, breathe. Let's be together. Mm-hmm. People go, well, what do? Let's be together.
When you say the soul is weary, some people might go, what are you talking about?
Okay, perfect. So my sense is there's something that animates us, you know, that's warm. Mm. Like when we reach out for each other's hands, there's a warmth quality. There's a connection. Mm-hmm. It's soul, to me, is also connected to the arts. Mm. So it's like the poetry, the dance, the expression, the food that has been ensouled with love, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you have a hard time with that word, just go to love, go to heart. So it's a place you can, if your heart is weary, you show up and just be together. You know,
is it a sense of self? Is that what you're talking, an inner sense of yourself?
Could be. Mm-hmm. Could be. To me, I didn't call it spirit sanctuary. Mm-hmm. That's a little different. Mm-hmm. And I love words because I love playing with, well, what is the vibration of the word, logos? Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, my degree's in speech communications, and I love the word.
Good.
So that's another show.
Oh, we're heading in the right direction.
But soul is warmth.
Okay.
Circulation. We have oxygen machines, and if someone's brain dead, we can keep their body afloat. But can we enliven them? And so some people are coming in, and they're kind of like that. They're not enlivened. Mm-hmm. They're burnt out. Mm-hmm. And so you come and, you know, I might have like a sweet little cup of tea or some sweet music or some hot stones, you know, put on your heart. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's like coming home.
So that for me, it's what I'm hearing you say, or what it's reminding me of, is when somebody says something that really touches me inside, can't really locate it, but it touches me inside. That which it touches is what I call my soul.
Beautiful. Great.
Yeah.
I love like not having answers and going, okay, so what does it mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
What does that word mean? Does it make you cringe because you have old memories from like some some religious upbringing that you no longer embody? Well, perhaps you're going to bring it to present time and maybe there was pieces of that you want to reclaim and not throw it all away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we have antipathy to something with a word because it was used in a way that reminds us of something, then. Mm-hmm. So burn out.
Yes.
Teens, can I just wrap it up?
Yep.
My son's going to be 13 in April, 4 days before my birthday. And I wrote a little note because what I've noticed is this is a lot of times when parents kind of check out because it gets hard. And it means that our higher self or some part of ourselves that maybe never actually got awake needs to wake up really fast if it hasn't yet. Fast track it. And what I've noticed is I need to be available and around. Just available and around and see what comes up.
Mm-hmm.
So just see how I can create my schedule. So I'm available and around. And if it's by phone, you know, he called me here when I was out in the studio and he said, Dad's been gone for hours. And I said, well, actually he left and he went to pick up your brother and he's going to be back. And it's been about 45 minutes. How are you doing? Fine. Good. You know, so there's something about being present and just allowing moments to arrive and being available to your teen so they do not get burnout.
Ah, that's wonderful. We've been talking to Taya Valentina Curandero. She's out in Marin County, and this has been the Traditional Healers Forum from the Four Corners of the World on La Onda Bajita here tonight. We want to thank you for all listening. It's always a pleasure for us to get together. We get together every 3 months, and we cover a wide array of issues that are present in today's world. This past year, we've talked about diabetes. We've went around the horn on depression, and we've also talked about the importance of gratitude in our ceremonies and how that can help in this healing process. We want to continue making this a your program. And for it to be your program, we need to hear from you. We want you to send me an email at dksaami@mac.com. Send us your issues, your concerns. We want to answer those on this program. Our next show is going to be live here in the studio, so we will be taking questions. And the next show is going to be Friday, June 22nd from 8 to 10 p.m. again on the La Onda Bajita program. Clay Schmitz, our video producer, he's been so wonderful, supportive of us, and has been video recording these shows and now archiving them. You can listen to all last year's shows at www.livingmedicines.com, and you'll see our programs archived there. He's also put them on YouTube. You can go to youtube.com/ Healers Forum, and you can watch the different segments of our program. If you want to hear those good words from Taya, there will be a segment on her. If it's for Rob, each one, the segments are all divided into each one of our different speakers, and so you can really listen to those, and you can contact them, and they'd love to hear you too. And so maybe, Taya, if people want to contact you, could you give us contact information?
I would love people to contact me, and I'm available at Taya, T-E-Y-A, at TayaValentina.com. So it's T-E-Y-A, and then at T-E-Y-A, Valentina.com. And a 24-hour voicemail that goes directly to voicemail is 415-451-7187.
And Rob, how can people contact you and the Inside Circle Foundation?
They can just go to the website at insidecircle.org. You can get a hold of me at my last name, Albee, A-L-L-B-E-E, at insidecircle.org, or just info@insidecircle.org. So either way.
I want to thank everybody for coming tonight and sharing. And I guess before we wrap things up, we want to thank everybody. I want to thank El Gavilan and Mr. Chooch for engineering. And I really want to thank you, David, for bringing us together here and reminding our listeners that there is a better way and that we do just need to choose to follow that.
Mm-hmm. And so those last words we want to leave you with is lean on somebody. We all need each other. We need to break away from this isolation, these fences we built and these doors that we've locked. We got to open our hearts to each other. We got to come back together as a families, as communities, as a nation, as peoples. We got to reclaim our heritages, our languages, and our ceremonies. We need to speak those good words of gratitude. We need to say a big thank you to Chooch for all that beautiful work that he's been doing for us, because today was quite a challenge. Thank you, Chooch.
Thank
we
you,
love
Chooch.
You, Mr. Chooch.
And so
you're
with
welcome.
So with that, this is David Kukla and Norma Labrava at La Onda Bajita saying good night to all of you. A big hug, a big arms around you.
Buenos noches.
So we'll be talking to you soon.